passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, everybody. It's John Pollock and Phil Chertok with our UFC 278 post show, in which we have a new UFC welterweight champion, Leon Rocky Edwards. One of the, I think one of the greatest endings to a fight I have ever seen. Just, I'm stunned as we are speaking minutes after watching this of what was just, dude, Kamaru Usman was just cruising. Leon, I cannot recall someone so broken in a fight that just seemed like, let's just get this fifth round over with. I mean, it was stunning. It was totally stunning.
Absolutely. I mean, we spoke last week about this fight and how it might play out. And I was predicting that Leon Edwards was going to win this fight. But this was certainly not the manner. And I was definitely doubting that prediction as we were heading into the fifth round.
I mean, this is probably a ending to a fight that will rank up there among the biggest ever, I think. Like, just, it wasn't just the way this fight was going, where Leon Edwards actually looked very good in the first round, and then it was just Usman turned it on for rounds 2 through 4 and was continuing that into the fifth. But then all of a sudden, there are 56 seconds left in the fight, and Leon Edwards, who's just showing nothing, absolutely nothing at the end of this fight, throws out this head kick and sleeps Kamaru Usman. And it is the combination of just this spectacular finish. It's a new champion. It's Kamaru Usman's second loss in his entire career since his second pro fight. Like, there was just, you couldn't have the stakes any larger. The significance of this loss be any higher. You know, there were comparisons on the broadcast to Anderson Silva's, you know, come from behind win against Chael Sonnen. You know, I'm sure people would compare it to Fedor losing to Fabricio Werdum. Just monumental upsets, but in the most spectacular fashion on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, the first round, Leon Edwards looked great. He was able to actually get a takedown, get mount, and take the back and look for his own submission. And you were thinking, wow, how could this, can he really do it? And then as the fight progressed, we saw that not really, it didn't seem that way, as Usman just took over, dominated with his wrestling and good boxing combinations. And I mean, everybody thought it was done. I mean, his corner was trying their best to motivate him. Dean Thomas said he was broken. The broadcast.
Dean Thomas literally came on in the fifth round and said he's not even looking his cornerman in the eyes in between rounds because he's embarrassed. He's embarrassed by his performance. This man is broken. And I don't know. Maybe Leon Edwards just, I literally, like, during this fifth round, I'm like looking up Leon Edwards' age, and like, this guy, like, this is going to be so detrimental to his career. He had to work so hard to get to this title fight. It's not like this was a giant, marketable fight. And this guy on top of it is going to have this lackluster, lifeless performance. That can this guy even revisit a title fight in his career? And that's what I'm thinking was going to be my discussion with you afterwards, of how Leon Edwards possibly finds his way back after such a just uninspired performance from rounds 2 through 5, and then this hits. I mean, like, honestly, like, it is the most incredible part about this sport, of where this guy's career could have been heading, and then he lands this head kick. His whole career is now rewritten from this point forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, he brought a title to the UK, first time since Michael Bisping, and just, you know, incredible reaction from the crowd, who was, you know, largely behind Usman from the get-go, but, you know, he was able to turn it with that comeback, and just his, you know, he seems to have a very warm personality that, you know, you can gravitate towards. And just that whole history of how long it took for him to get this fight. I mean, how many times, you know, fights got scrapped, and the whole winning streak. So yeah, amazing, amazing story for him, and it gets to continue, and he gets to have almost certainly another big fight with Kamaru Usman.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I kind of feel you have to do the rematch after this. Although, you know, you do have like Hamza fighting in 3 weeks, and stylistically, that's a hell of a fight with Leon Edwards and Chimaev. If you were to go with like an in-between opponent, but it just seems so tailor-made. Like this finish is going to be replayed ad nauseum on every single UFC broadcast from now until the end of time. That I just can't imagine that, unless there's like a reason Usman can't come back. That, I mean, this rematch feels like it could be very, very significant to do the third fight between them sometime next year.
Yeah. And I mean, definitely comeback of the year kind of cemented with this performance. And yeah, so I obviously Chimaev, they're riding a lot on him. But it's how can you not give Usman this fight, especially not just because he's such a long standing champion, but how this fight played out in particular. The only downside is that it wasn't the most thrilling of fights until that.
No, I mean, there's a high probability that the next fight is just this exact same fight, except a different final 56 seconds. Like, but people will be intrigued of lightning striking twice, I think, again, because, dude, this was just total domination by Kamaru Usman, save for the first round where he did have trouble. But Leon Edwards, like, bookended this fight with putting Kamaru Usman in the most danger that he has been in his entire UFC tenure.
Yeah. That was a pretty exciting moment in the first round, and he wasn't able to recreate it. He did attempt some additional takedowns, but it was really the element of surprise that was allowed him to capture that in the first round. And he wasn't able to recreate any of that in the subsequent rounds, but he didn't need to, because he had that one trick pony. You know, that he could fire off in that fifth round.
We'll go through some of the highlights of the fight itself, but as you were waking up today, Phil, and realizing what you had to do on Saturday night, and you're skimming over this card, what were you thinking going into UFC 278?
I wasn't, well, the top three fights were pretty exciting. You know, we had Jose Aldo versus Merab, and that was a pretty highly anticipated fight, because Jose has looked so good. And then you have this Paulo Costa versus Luke Rockhold fight. You know, never.
I'm sure you imagined it playing out exactly as it went.
Never a dull moment with Costa or even Luke Rockhold on the card. Like, always, I don't know if the word is entertaining or just stupefying in the build up to the event.
You know, what was the word we kept using after SummerSlam with that Brock Lesnar tractor bit?
We
kept calling it a spectacle. That's what I thought Rockhold and Costa was like. That,
yes,
for some people, that's going to be their fight of the year. It's not going to be mine, but my God, was it riveting for the 15 minutes it lasted, that we will certainly get into. As this was a card that, man, they brought up the fact that they were at elevation because they're in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I cannot recall a card where there were so many high-level athletes that some of them were just totally exhausted on this card. It played a big factor on this. It reminded me, of course, everyone goes back to the Mexico City card where Cain Velasquez kind of just became the icon when it comes to fighting at elevation. But I remember that Denver card when John Jones fought Quinton Jackson and they booked a bunch of heavyweight fights on there. I don't know why. And that was a pretty rough night to be watching guys just huffing and puffing their way. But it, like, there were just a lot of performances on this show where you just seemed like, man, there were some people that were not ready to go the distance here. And I think it played a factor on a lot of guys on this card.
Oh, it definitely did. I don't even remember the last time that the UFC was in Utah or Salt Lake City.
2016, they did a fight night there.
Yeah,
This is only the second time they've been to Utah.
Yeah, and we were also talking about this. The Utah State, I don't know, there's a fund. The UFC got enticed to come and put on an event here, and...
They were promoting the tourism in Salt Lake City and Utah. So it would not surprise me if there was some kind of site fee attached to this because it was tied in with promoting the tourism within the state. So and you were pointing that out, that it seems that Utah has been introducing this initiative of bringing a lot of different events to the state, and UFC kind of fell under that.
Yeah, but to go back to the conditioning aspect, I guess the fact that the last time that they were there it was just a fight night. I mean, I don't even remember what it was, and I certainly don't recall cardio being an issue in that one. So could be that people were just unaware of the elevation. Although we did hear that Leon Edwards came 2 weeks early. To make sure that he acclimated to the environment. And I mean, he certainly had enough in the tank in that fifth round.
Yeah, they were explaining the differences that both are ready for elevation because Kamaru Usman trains in Colorado, so he is used to this. And Leon Edwards slept in a special bed. It's like, okay, I don't know if those things are equal, but I guess they were because, dude, Leon Edwards shut down after this first round. But let's go back to the opening round, and the major takeaway from this round was Usman just slipping up and Edwards capitalizing and taking him down, becoming the first person to take Kamaru Usman down in the UFC, getting mount and lands an elbow, then goes to the back, and he's got a body triangle on, and he's got some time on the clock here to work in, and he does get in some strikes, doesn't really threaten to finish the fight, but this was a clear Leon Edwards round and started the fight off immediately grabbing people, because this was not just going to be a repeat of their first fight, which was not the most entertaining 15-minute affair when they fought the last time, which was a fight pass prelim in 2015.
Wow. Moving up in the world.
Were you impressed here with Edwards coming out? Because you, I can attest that you did predict Leon Edwards to win when we were out last weekend. Seeing Edwards take Usman down, were you just throwing out your prediction for the Hail Mary? Or was this, yep, exactly, according to plan, I knew Edwards would get him down?
I did expect him to have good wrestling, and I didn't expect him to be so aggressive with the takedown, but it was really just a situation, timing and opportunity. He got double underhooks and he got that body lock, and he just used the trip. And I think Usman, as I mentioned already, just was not expecting that. So he gave up the position pretty, he ended up in mount right away, and then he went to the back. So I did not expect him to take down Usman over and over again or anything like that, but I did think he would have good wrestling and have good escapes from the bottom, which he generally did. He always did escape the bottom position, but Usman was, generally speaking, over and over again still able to take him down, and it did get easier as the fight progressed as well.
Yeah. Once the second round started, you saw Kamaru come out, and it just seemed like he had you know, he was going to attack him with his strikes and pour on a ton of pressure. And that's what he did here, and would get his first takedown of Edwards in, or sorry, this is in the second round. I'm getting ahead of myself here. In the second round, he's attacking him with the strikes. And then there was an eye poke that caused a brief timeout before they restarted the fight. And it's Usman going to the body pretty heavily. And it's near the end of the second that he gets the takedown on Edwards. And throughout the rest of the fight, it was with relative ease that Usman got these takedowns. And that to me just told me, like, Leon Edwards, like, was exhausted because he put up no fight for these takedowns. And if you watch their first fight, I mean, eventually Usman could get him down, but he had a hell of a time early dealing with Edwards. And by rounds two and three, there was no defense. It was Usman just like putting minimal effort and putting him on his back.
Yeah, there was even one takedown, I think it was in the third, where Usman looked like he was just going to fake for a single leg, and Edwards just had no reaction, so he took it. And then, you know, he ended up, you know, getting him down off of that. But Edwards, like I said, he did always get back to his feet. So there was definitely improvements there. He did a good job of, like, fighting the hands, but until the finale of the fight, it was just so much of it, so much pressure. And also, Usman was doing a good job of just, like, boxing him up when he got him close on the fence as well, which also made the takedowns easier.
After the third round, I mean, it's two and three are strong rounds for Usman. He's just between his striking, the takedowns. I mean, it's relentless pressure, and Edwards is not putting up a whole lot. But it was wearing down. It wasn't as bad as it would get. But after the third round, like, he just goes to his corner, and this is where, like, he's not looking at his corner, and they are just screaming at him because they're seeing this, like, you won a round against this guy. You've already done what people thought was impossible. You've won a round, you've taken him down, and we're just watching this fight slip away. So mm-hmm. I could certainly understand, like, this, we are probably not getting another title shot anytime soon. If we, like, this is our shot. So they are just trying to motivate this guy. And during the fourth round, Usman takes him down, and you've got his corner yelling, "You've got to get the fuck up, Leon." And then Leon's like, "Oh, I do. You're right."
It was the exact opposite type of corner from Usman. You know, he's got Trevor Whitman, who's like the quietest, most soft-spoken coach in the game, win or lose. And yeah, on the other side, you've just got these foul-mouthed Brits who are just yelling at their guy to you know, wake up and get into this thing.
And for some fighters, like, they are going to want, like, the technical advice that their corner is going to provide them. Others are like, dude, the work is done. It's like, I need somebody that is just going to be my motivator. It's mm-hmm. like all fighters are going to respond differently to have the corner that is going to be most necessary for them. So after four rounds, it is a clear 3-1 scorecard that I think everyone had for Usman. And we go into the fifth, and it's just such a dejected, like, Edwards just seems like he is already mentally out of this arena and on the flight back home. Like, he is just so despondent. He seems like he has no life left in him. Usman's controlling him against the fence. They get separated, and Edwards kicks him low, and then the replay airs, and Rogan, this was amazing because Joe Rogan has never heard a timeout for a low blow that he has not questioned. It's like, let's see the replay. Let's get to see the replay. And 95% of the time, Rogan's skepticism is proven to be unfounded. Tonight, there were quite a few that Joe Rogan, this is going to fuel him for the next decade to question every single low blow, because tonight, between some of the eye pokes and the low blows that got timeouts, the replays, they certainly gave some ambiguity, such as this low kick that was more right on the belt line of Kamaru Usman.
Yeah, there was a lot of questionable ref moments, a lot of fence grabs that yes. probably should have been called, and it just, like, they're just so unwilling to deduct a point for a fence grab. Although there was one moment in this fight where Leon Edwards used the fence to pull himself up, and Herb Dean sat him back down. So I guess that's something, but, you know, there's a lot of, like, fingers in the gloves as well in this one. It's like, they really need to get consistent and actually take away points, and then these things will be reduced significantly.
Well, as Rogan and Cormier were uncovering whether this was a low shot on Usman or not, the fight resumed, and we're just watching this thing tick down where we are just going to file away another decision victory for Kamaru Usman. And you and I were going to come on here and talk about how we had this crazy fight with Luke Rockhold and Paulo Costa, and then a main event with Usman and Edwards, and boom, lands the head kick. Usman is out 4 minutes and 4 seconds of the fifth round. It was just a shocking, shocking end. And then Leon Edwards just gives like the greatest speech ever as Joe Rogan is in the ring interviewing him. He's yelling into the camera. It was a really awesome speech that he gave. Look at me now, addressing all the doubters. And then they play the Rocky theme throughout the arena for it. It was quite the scene. It was pretty incredible. I feel like this is going to be one of those all-time legendary moments that UFC is going to promote.
Yeah, it was feel good. Like I said, he was able to turn the crowd, and how could you not after that amazing comeback and in that fashion with that head kick? And then, yeah, gave an incredible, riveting speech of, you know, about, you know, his whole path to this title, you know, dealing with injuries, dealing with canceled fights, you know, no contest against Bilal Muhammad. I mean, this fight got delayed. So, you know, I mean, we were unsure if it would even still happen up until today, right? You never know with this game. But incredible post-fight speech to top off an incredible comeback victory. And you have to be happy for this guy. Like, just like, I got nothing bad to say about Leon Edwards.
Odds-wise, it's not in that realm of greatest like championship upsets. Like, it's not Matt Serra. I don't think it's Juliana Pena. But it's kind of the next tier, mainly because not so much that there was this disparity between Leon Edwards and Kamaru Usman, but it's Kamaru Usman's run that he was on, the nature of how this fight was played out. And I think there was, you know, from the first fight, I think Kamaru Usman had made a lot more improvements than Leon Edwards did, that I didn't see too many people, aside from present company excluded, picking Leon Edwards to win this fight. Do you look at this as like a fairly big upset, or you don't look at it at that kind of grand level?
It was an upset, but I don't think it's one of the bigger ones. I mean,
if Leon Edwards had not won in this fashion, if, say, he had just gone out there and won a convincing 3-2 or 4-1 decision, we wouldn't be talking about this as like this big upset, like maybe mild surprise.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and the way that as we were talking last week, when I said that Edwards was going to win, I said, if Kamaru wins, it'll look a lot like the first Masvidal fight. And it was kind of looking like that a little bit, right? Although he was doing a little bit better with the boxing, and of course, minus the first round where he got taken down himself. So, you know, I think at this point, Usman was such a known quantity, and we know how good he was. And Edwards, he's very good, but, you know, because we haven't seen him a bunch of times, there was a sort of like this unknown element to it. So I mean, it was an upset, but I wouldn't put it as like one of the bigger upsets that we've seen. Now, I bet going into that fifth round, the live odds must have been like astronomical against Leon Edwards. So I wonder if I don't remember them showing it on screen, but I mean, I probably would have had it at like -800, -1,000 at that point for Edwards to get the W.
Yeah. Is this going to cool the talk of Kamaru Usman going up to light heavyweight?
I don't even know. Like, these things that come out, like, why do people even print these things? How do these questions get asked? Like, what? Unbelievable.
He was going to leapfrog middleweight altogether and just go right to light heavyweight and, I guess, fight Jiří Procházka. I don't know if that would be in the cards for Kamaru Usman. I think the rematch,
and it's also his boxing match with Canelo's off the table too.
Yeah, this has really put a damper on these wild plans that Usman had. But I think the rematch is what you do next. I think that would be it. But Dude, if you watch that ad that they played tonight, like, dude, they are putting all their eggs into the Khamzat Chimaev basket. Like, they, if he wins, especially if in a really spectacular fashion, I can't totally discount that they would want to go to Chimaev, despite this kind of being your ready-made option. I would say my heavy odds would be Usman, but I don't completely dismiss Chimaev if he looks great in 3 weeks.
Yeah, I wouldn't dismiss him either. I mean, the one thing that you've got with Chimaev is he also competes at 185, so there's always the possibility you do a fight over there. Just have him headline like a fight night in front of a crowd. But if he wins spectacular, the thing with that fight in September is there's a good chance it does better on pay-per-view than maybe this fight did, just because of Nate Diaz's star power. So depending on how popular it is, if it draws a bunch of eyeballs, then yeah, he totally could, leapfrog Usman, which sounds crazy to say. But again, a lot of that is timing, right? Like, how quickly do you want to put that fight together, right? Because they still don't have a main event for December, although the talk is they wanted Jones on that card versus Stipe.
Usman also got, like, knocked out. Like, it was a pretty bad knockout.
Yes.
The most, obviously the most significant of his career that he's, damage that he has taken, that if Edwards is ready to go in like January, February, like, who's to say Usman is ready to come back? And that's where it comes down to the timing issue. So we will see. It was interesting that typically on the pay-per-view, they'll air the video for the next pay-per-view, and then they come back and we get the matchup board of the pay-per-view main card with the five fights. Tonight, it was just the video for Nate and Chimaev, and we come back, and that is the only fight they are pushing, because I think if they put the five fights up there, second from the top is probably going to be Johnny Walker and Iwan Kutalaba, Shamil Abdurahimov against Jailton Almeida, Hakeem Dawodu against Julian Arosa, Arena Aldana against Macy Chason. Like, they are believing you're buying this fight this card for Chimaev and Nate Diaz, and they're probably not wrong. It's probably we don't need to load up this card. People are going to buy it for this one fight, but there is no support for this main event. It is all on this, because if one of those two somehow could not make it, I don't think this pay-per-view, it would be canceled. It would 100% be canceled if one of these two got hurt.
I totally agree. Like, one of the worst main cards of all time, I'd have to say. And even the main event, like, as fun as it is, like, seeing Nate, it's not a good matchup. So it
might be a very depressing fight for Nate Diaz fans.
Yeah, yeah. Other than the fact that it's his final one, and he's finally free of his contract. So that should bring a lot of intrigue to the fight. I what the pre-fight antics might be the week of, all the questions surrounding his contract and the status. And although, Dana's saying, he's got a chance to win, of course.
Yep, yep, there's a chance. Paulo Costa against Luke Rockhold. I don't know how we're going to break down this fight, but this was quite the fight week, where Luke Rockhold was just putting the UFC on blast on the UFC's stage. I mean, this guy was, this guy had no F's to give all week, and was very outspoken, to the point that his media day appearance, they did not even put that up on the UFC YouTube page, along with all the others that did their Q&A with the members of the media. So it was very interesting. Like, he's like, listening to him, like, I appreciate like the candidness that he had. I also looked at it that this guy, it was really hard if you're someone that's like looking into like a guy's headspace and where he is. This is 3 years removed from his last fight, and he was taking on a guy that was going to be very, very dangerous for him. I did not see this one getting out of the first round. It did. And I mean, it was quite the spectacle, as we will get into here. But did you follow any of Luke Rockhold's media appearances this week? And did you have any thoughts about kind of where he is? He's 37 years old coming into this fight, but it's been a long time since we've seen him.
Yeah, I mean, well, in regards to the media appearances, I did see some clips of him on Ariel's show, and you told me about the the media scrum he did. And so I did check that out. And yeah, I mean, it was very intense. There was a lot of bitterness there. It felt, you know, on the Ariel show, he straight up called the UFC a mafia. So it was, that just led me to believe that this was in general going to be his last fight, because, you know, how can you call your employer these things and expect any type of positive return back? And regarding, you know, his age, like, we've seen him like get some, be brutally knocked out in several of his last fights. And he also has just a lot of wear and tear on him, injuries and all that. And Paulo Costa, even though, you know, he's lost his last two fights, the last one, he didn't look that bad against Vettori. And he's right at the top of the division. So I was not expecting the best Luke Rockhold performance.
Yeah, when you go down, like, since the loss to Michael Bisping, which was over 6 years ago, he's only had three fights since then, not including tonight's with Paulo Costa. So Rockhold is out, and he has been given permission. He can wear a sleeve over his shin, and the fight begins. Costa looks in, both guys look, in tremendous shape, but Costa especially, like, he just seemed to be in peak form here. Rockhold shoots in, and he just starts getting drilled repeatedly. I thought this was going to be it almost immediately, but he comes up. He's all marked up on his forehead, but he's able to survive here. And it's Costa that gets the takedown and mounts Rockhold, but loses it. Costa was able to get a few takedowns in this fight and even get mount several times. He had no ability to maintain mount, though. It was just almost with ease that Rockhold escaped these, but, a strong Costa round. Rockhold's highlight, though, was just attacking the body, and he just hit these big four body kicks. And kind of the theme throughout this fight for Rockhold was that, I mean, number one, he was totally exhausted by the end of this first round. I can't remember a fighter being so tired. He was leaning over, but all of his offense was just, it was expending, like, what is going to be the most taxing? Because that's going to be what I put out here. And I mean, this guy had an unbelievable amount of heart to make it through 15 minutes. But at the end of this first round, if you had told me, what are the odds this guy's going to make it another 10 minutes? I would say absolutely zero. Absolutely zero. This guy is going to make it two more rounds, because he looks like he is about to faint.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, this was the level of fatigue that he was demonstrating. Like, as you mentioned, it's very, you can't think of a situation in such a high level fight where it was like that. Like, I think back to like Rodolfo Vieira, when he got submitted by, I don't even remember who it was, who, like, some like minus 1000 or some plus 1000 underdog. But that was not such a high stake fight. And Luke Rockhold is somebody who's been known for conditioning, through his career. I mean, he's never really looked tired. So, but I think, you know, the layoff plus the altitude plus the nature of the fight, it was crazy from the get go. That all played a big factor in that. And yeah, I did not think it was going to last, but oh boy, did it.
Surprise, surprise. So Costa wins the first round. In the second, Rockhold comes out and he's aggressively going for the body. He gets a takedown, but when Rockhold would get on top, it was just like he had so much, you know, he was just leaving openings and just seemed to be creating these own problems for himself to not be able to capitalize with these takedowns. Cormier is noting, and this is Daniel Cormier speaking, who's been a teammate of his for over a decade. I've never seen Luke Rockhold this tired. So, I mean, that is really telling, considering the source here of Daniel Cormier. But then every time, like, you're thinking, how's Rockhold going to muster this? Like, he would come out with something. Like, he landed this left hand and stunned Costa. And the thing is, Costa is also getting tired here at this point. So you're starting to get into this territory where both guys are gassed, but neither is going to give up here. And it's just Rockhold continuing to expend so much energy. And Costa then punches him right on the cup. And he thinks the fight is over, but referee Mike Beltran is explaining, no, you hit him in the balls. And Cormier is on commentary. He's yelling for Luke, take the full 5 minutes.
Yes.
Take the whole 5 minutes. But he only takes a minute 25 of it, perhaps sensing that he can see Costa is also tired and doesn't want to give him a chance to rest. I don't know. But he needed these full five, but he did not take them. I thought this was another Costa round. And then we go to the epic third round. They like if they had energy meters, they would have been like flashing red. Like, this is game over. Reach into your pocket if you want to continue playing the game, because we need some more coins. Costa loses his balance. So Rockhold leaps into his guard, but Costa quickly gets out. Rockhold is just throwing everything, blasts him in the nose. And then Costa is like, they're both like talking shit to one another. So Rockhold like pretty much says, fuck you, and nails him with this left hand of death. Rockhold then shoots, but it's the worst like attempt at a takedown here. He's just easily stuffed and he's put into side control. And this is where they're swearing at one another. Rockhold reverses. He gets on top. This crowd is going nuts at this point. And then to end the fight, Rockhold, whose nose has been busted up for most of the fight, rubs his nose and all the blood all over Costa at the end. Just completely disgusting. And Costa wins this fight by unanimous decision, 30-27 all. That was the same score I had. How did you score the fight, Phil? I mean, this is one where
I had it 30-27 as well, but I feel like we need to like make it 30-26 and remove 1 point from Luke Rockhold's score just for the disgusting blood smearing moment at the end of the fight.
This was totally gross. And yes. Dude, Joe Rogan calling this replay, he watches the replay and he's like, that is so hilarious. That's so Luke Rockhold. It's like, of course that is your reaction. I am appalled watching this. This is the same promotion that they had to replace the ring canvas on Fox because they didn't want blood to be shown on network television. That's how worried they were about their perception. And now it's like, zoom in, get the replay. He's wiping his nose full of blood all over this other man. So
is this the most famous blood moment, I think, in UFC history is BJ Penn licking the blood off of his gloves after.
Okay, this was way more.
This has surpassed it by you know, leaps and bounds. Also, you know, there was also these great moments in the fight where they're talking to each other, and Luke just keeps saying "fuck you, fuck you."
It was two guys who like they had nothing left by the end of this round. So, I mean, it was super compelling because it was just they were throwing all that they had left at each other, especially Rockhold. So it was a really dramatic fight and the crowd went nuts for it. And then after the fight, Costa gets interviewed and then Luke Rockhold says he can't do this anymore. He's talking about all that he's been through the last few years. I'm fucking old, and that looks to be the end of Luke Rockhold's career. I cannot say that that sounds like a bad decision to be making at this point. Just given everything, like this week, it was weird. Like, he seemed to be really into this return, but at the same time, seems totally, completely diametrically and philosophically opposed to everything this company stands for, that I just don't know if this is really the avenue you want to be continuing down. And that this performance really did. I'm sure the elevation affected this. I've never seen Luke Rockhold this tired ever in a fight. So that part was a bit jarring, but yes, this does bring an end to Luke Rockhold's career. If you believe it will be the end of his career.
I mean, I think it'll definitely be the end of, well, I mean, I don't know what his contract status is, but I would assume that this is the end of his run in the UFC. I mean, he just like against, you know, he was a Strikeforce guy. He's a Scott Coker guy. So if I see him again, you know, Bellator wouldn't surprise me. But I think because of the miles on the body, really, it does make sense to end it now. And yeah, it was a defeat, but it was a very compelling fight. And if you know, you have that.
I honestly believe people are like 10 years from now, if people are talking about Luke Rockhold, like let's say Luke, I was going to say if Luke Rockhold goes into the UFC Hall of Fame, I don't know if he will be the top candidate of people they are going to necessarily honor. Yeah. But if they do, like I feel this fight is going to live in infamy right up there with him winning the title. Like, yeah. I think this one will be like this fight will probably age very well with people in terms of their memories of Luke Rockhold and his legacy.
Yeah. And like historically, people have kind of been sour on Luke Rockhold, not for because of his skills or anything he does in the cage, because he just sort of comes off as like one of the most obnoxious personalities outside of the, you know, of the fight time. But with this performance and, you know, a pretty feel good speech at the end, you can't help but like, you know, have a soft spot for him as maybe he makes his last appearance.
Yeah, I would say if you did not hear all the stuff this week and just like it's one thing when fighters are outspoken, it's quite another when they're doing it on like on the UFC's turf during the promotion. Like we saw a bit of this with Tony Ferguson earlier this year, but this was like exponentially more. That I will say for the on the UFC side, I thought it was nice of the fact they at least did give Rockhold the chance to like speak after the fight.
Yeah.
Like that could have been a production call. Like, listen, they did not put his stuff up on their YouTube channel. They could have said just cut after Costa and he doesn't get to do that speech. And they did give him that, you know, that ability to have that nice send off. And also as he's leaving the cage, Cormier gets up and gives him this big hug that's caught on camera, which was a cool moment as well. And just watching those two, like it really struck me that really does conclude that big AKA era with Kane, Rockhold, Cormier, and Khabib now all gone. That was, you know, those are the big four that you associated with. And at one time, four of the top fighters in the world all under one roof there in San Jose.
Yes. And also there's, is that the conclusion of the Strike Force guys as well? Like, is anybody left from that era? I don't think so, because you know Jacare is gone now, and
yeah, like Woodley's left you, Woodley? UFC at least. I'm racking my brain right now of guys that that pretty much yeah. Luke Rockhold would certainly be your most prominent that is that is still around. So
mm-hmm. There you go. One piece of breaking news, by the way, since you mentioned Tony Ferguson. It looks like UFC 279 is getting bolstered. Mike Bond of MMA Junkie reporting that Dana White confirmed that Tony Ferguson versus Li Jing Lang at welterweight will be added to UFC 279.
Wow. In 3 weeks.
Yeah.
That's a, well, that card needed something beyond. Do you think that card needed more? Do you feel like that main event is big enough that the people that are buying it regardless just because of that fight?
I think that Nate Diaz is certainly enough of a draw to pull in a certain crowd, but where he excels is when he has a great opponent. And I think Khamzat is a great opponent, but he's captured the imagination of the UFC audience. But I don't think like anybody outside of like hardcore fans know who he is yet. This is an opportunity for that. Now, what this also does, as you meant, is like potentially if there's an injury or something happens where the main event can't happen, you have one of these guys maybe can step in, right? So
I would imagine that's what Tony Ferguson is there for. Although it would be criminal to put Tony Ferguson against Khamzat Chimaev at this point.
It would be criminal to put Li Jing Lang against him. I mean, we already saw what happened the first time.
Yeah, that's Yeah, that's a very, very rough knockout that Tony Ferguson is coming off of. And I mean, that's a very quick fight to make for 3 weeks from now. So then moving on from the Costa Rockhold fight, it was Jose Aldo against Merab Dvalishvili. And I was very intrigued by this fight. And the first round, Jose Aldo looked very sharp. He came in, looked great, and early on, Dvalishvili is going for a single leg, and Aldo, like his takedown defense was phenomenal in this fight. Unfortunately, like you don't get points for, or you don't get credit from judges for takedown defense. Like that's its award in and of itself, is that you're not being taken down. So Aldo did introduce a leg kick in the first round and then timed a knee to the body, tries for a flying knee into the cage, and he's going for the body of Dvalishvili. Close first round. I gave it to Aldo. Did you see Aldo winning the first round?
I did, but it was a very, very close round. And so, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that Merab won this one either, but I did give it to Aldo just because I thought he had like the stronger strikes and he was able to escape those takedown attempts with relative ease.
The second round, Aldo is continuing to defend takedowns, and you have to wonder if that was starting to kind of wear on Aldo as well. He's pressed against the cage. Merab is starting to get, he's controlling this round. The crowd is booing as he continually shoots for takedowns, and that was kind of the most interesting part here, because over a 15-minute fight, Merab typically averages over 7 takedowns per fight. He got none in this. And Aldo, his takedown defense is like 90%. So one of those was going to win out, and it turned out to be Aldo. So third round, I had it even after those two rounds. And then the third round, this was the most clear-cut round. Merab just walked him down, was striking. Aldo had definitely tired by the third round, and Merab still could not take him down, though. He went 0 for 15 somewhere in that neighborhood, but did use his striking here. He was clinching with Aldo, knees to the side, and won that round. So I had it 29-28 for Merab. Afterwards, the judges scored it 30-27 and 2-29-28 scorecards, none of which I had a big issue with, because I thought the first two were close rounds. And but I did give Aldo the first.
Yeah, I gave him the first as well, not the second. I didn't think the second was that close, really. I know that, what was it, Pedineris in the corner said, only if a judge scores stalling is they gonna give them that round. But it was that round, Aldo really didn't get anything off. So even if it was quote unquote stalling, that was the offense of the round. And so I think you had to give it to Merab.
Yeah, I think this was one where, I mean, Aldo's takedown defense was phenomenal throughout the fight, but I mean, that's not going to win you the fight. And he looked very sharp in the first round, but it just seemed like that output just depleted in the second and the third. It was pretty much, there was nothing, essentially. So that was kind of the fight. And then Dvalishvili wins. So his unbeaten streak has now extended to 8 fights that he has won in a row. So Joe Rogan asks him, your training partner is the bantamweight champion, Aljamain Sterling. And he gives this long answer about the potential of fighting Sterling. And he asks for people to no longer ask this question. We are brothers. And he goes over and he hugs Aljamain. I was waiting for the follow up. Merab, does that mean you're picking TJ Dillashaw to beat Sterling? Is that what you're hoping for? Because what are we doing here? Are you just going to fight other guys and not go for the title? I don't know.
We've heard this before. I mean, George St. Pierre, when there was discussions of upcoming, newly retired Rory McDonald, when he was early on in his career coming up, George St. Pierre made it clear that he wasn't going to fight a teammate. And, for some people, and it's not just, a sport, it's martial arts. There's brotherhood in that. And for Merab, that seems to be important for him. But yeah, of course, it puts a damper on his career prospects. There's a lot of good talent in that division. So I think that there's a lot of opportunities for fights that you can do in the meantime. And, it's a type of thing you can revisit, in a year if Aljo has really, has defended his belt multiple times. But there's a lot of good people waiting. So, if Merab is unwilling to do that, then, he can fight those guys.
Just looking at the stats that they put out. So Merab was 0 for 16 on takedowns in the fight. But his output just extended as the fight wore on, had a very big third round. So 16 takedowns, nonetheless, that Aldo was able to defend is no small feat, but it does end Aldo's three-fight win streak, because plenty of people thought that Aldo could be in line for a title fight if he won this, especially against a guy the level of Merab. But in Jose Aldo, like, no, he did not win this fight, but I think this guy has plenty of fights still available to him. It's, you know, he came out and they were like giving the, like granted, he has reached that status where he is now in almost like this legendary light that people place him in. He's still 35 years old, which is remarkable to me that it's like all that he has done so far. But you know, to me, he can still compete with a lot of bantamweights. Maybe he's not going to fight for a title again, but you can still do a lot of fights with him over, you know, the course of the next. I think he could fight for another 2 to 3 years.
I agree. And even like how many fighters could replicate this type of performance that Merab gave, like the constant pressure. It's one thing to try.
He's never had a fight where he has not gotten a takedown. Like they brought up on the broadcast, his previous worst outing was getting 2 takedowns on John Dodson. Like, dude, he got shut out by Aldo in that department. Like that is a, you know, some value that Aldo walks away from this fight with.
Yeah. And just the, you know, Merab's cardio output, like it's not easy to replicate that. So, you know, what about Corey Sandhagen? That'd be a good one.
He's fighting Sonya Dong in a, next month, but I mean, we have a bunch of bantamweight fights coming up and there's going to be winners and losers of those fights. Like bantamweight is so deep that you're not going to have a shortage of options. And Merab can have his pick of the non-champions that he can go through. Hard fights that at least temporarily are not leading towards a championship fight. But who knows? I mean, Aljamain Sterling, that's hardly a gimme that he beats TJ Dillashaw either. We'll go through the rest of these fairly quickly. So Wu Yanan took on Lutsi Putilova. Putilova won the first round, and then in the second, Yanan is landing several leg kicks, and Putilova responds, gets a headlock, and takes her down to the mat, and then gets her back. Yanan is fighting the hands to try and get out of danger, but Putilova moves to side control, mounts her, and then drops all these elbows on her for the stoppage at 4 minutes and 4 seconds of the second round.
I thought it was a really good performance. Putilova looked great in this fight. She had a sharp jab. And, you know, she's somebody who was out of the UFC for quite a while. But if you go back and you look at her losses in the UFC, Justine Kish, Antonina Shevchenko, Liz Carmouche, and Irene Aldana. And since then, she's won 6 out of 7 to get back into the UFC, including tonight's fight. So, you know, I think, you know, somebody to keep an eye on. Her boxing looked really good. So I'd like to see her against, you know, some tougher competition. And, you know, always nice to have fresh blood in the women's division.
Yes. I thought she had a very nice performance in this fight. So a nice story with her coming back to the UFC and now putting some wins together as well. And the pay-per-view opened with Tyson Pedro and Harry Hunsucker. Sounds like a villain in a like teen novel.
I was thinking of the Coen brothers movie, you know, the Hunsucker Proxy.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, this was a lot shorter than a feature film. Tyson Pedro, who, of course, he missed 3 years of action due to a variety of injuries. And then he came back earlier this year, beating Ike Villanueva by knockout in April. And in this one, he made very short work of Hunsucker. He nailed him with a jab as Hunsucker was coming in, followed with a front kick to the body, which it was lights out here for Hunsucker as he took this body shot, an uppercut, and then several more strikes as he went down. 1:05, this one goes, and Tyson Pedro gets the win, improving to 9-3. And this audience went nuts because they had just sat through a bunch of decisions on the prelims, including a very taxing heavyweight fight that we'll get into in a minute. So they were happy to see a stoppage.
Yeah, and he gave a nice little promo thanking where he got the crowd all excited because, you know, he said, I haven't fought in front of a crowd for years, so make some noise.
That's right,
and,
yeah.
And so that was a nice little moment. Definitely, you know, on any other card, it'd be one of the, you know, one of the more memorable performances. But, nonetheless, still a very good one. And I think obviously he needs a step up in competition.
Yeah, this should catapult him in that light heavyweight division, which is always a division that needs contenders. So I would certainly see him moving up in the ranks. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see where he is paired next after this, because this was very short, but very good performance from him. The prelims included Marcin Tybura and Alexander Romanov. And this was one where Elevation certainly had its impact. Romanov looked like a monster in this first round. He just slams Tybura in the air. And Tybura is a bigger heavyweight than Romanov is. But Romanov is this 16-0 rising star that's gone 5-0 so far coming into this fight in the UFC. But he just gets collar tied here, and he's drilling him with knees. It was a dominant round for Romanov. I went 10-8. And then the second, it was like, this guy was like, oh, where are we again? Salt Lake City? Because I just gave everything I had to those 5 minutes, and this dude was so tired. Tybura is just picking him apart. He defends the takedown, and this is where there is a low shot on Romanov, but the replay shows that it was to the body, and Jason Herzog takes note of this. So this was one of our several like phantom penalties on the show.
Yeah, well, I mean, Romanov was going to milk whatever he could get to get some win back.
So Tybura, I felt, won the second round. And then in the third, they start the round off by hugging. And Romanov is doing the Ali shuffle, which, I mean, this guy was odd choices that he was making. Like, he needed to win this round. Tybura is attacking him with jabs. There's a knee to the body by Romanov. But at this point, both guys are pretty spent. This was not a pretty end to this fight. And Tybura ends up winning by majority decision, 29-28, 29-28, and 28-28. And yes, great first round performance from Romanov. And then there were 10 minutes that followed it.
Yeah. But you know what? As the broadcast pointed out, you know, he's somebody who didn't even have a fight that went the distance prior to this. And it's a good learning experience. It's a way to see the holes that you may have. Obviously, not every fight's going to be at elevation, but you should be prepared for every situation. And you shouldn't be doing the Ali shuffle in the middle of a fight that's very close. Because
he started twerking at one point.
Yeah, and then he looked befuddled when the decision was read. It's like, I mean. Maybe
those are my favorite.
It could have been a draw, right? As you pointed out, like the first round was.
I had it as a draw. Yeah,
that's how I had it as well. Like a rare 10-8 from me, but I think the total strike count in the first round was like 40-0.
Yeah, so Tybura did not get. I don't think he landed a shot in that first round. So I felt it kind of had to be a 10-8, but getting the elusive fill. 10-8 over there. Yeah, Tybura was 0-3 in the first round when it came to significant strikes. Next up, Leonardo Santos and Jared Gordon. Very uneventful first round. Gordon hit an uppercut to the body and then landed several strikes. In the second round, Santos got to the back and Gordon grabs the fence to prevent the takedown. And Daniel Cormier is just incensed. He's like, I don't have any skin in the game of who wins this fight. That's just really annoying that this guy, because Santos was on his way to getting him down to the ground. And this fence grab did prevent that. So Gordon doesn't get taken down. He did land more strikes than Santos in this round. And then in the third, this is where Gordon is warned about the fence grabbing by Herb Dean. And it's Gordon pressing the attack. He's certainly the fresher of the two, and he's landing with jabs. Santos tries for a single leg, and he just holds on. He's got nothing as the crowd is booing, and they just end in a clinch at the end. 30-27 scorecards across the board for Jared Gordon. That was the scorecard that I had. And then Jared Gordon, after winning, they've got the camera on him, and he's there on camera just long enough to realize that they are not sending anyone in to interview him. And he did look kind of he looked a little disappointed that he wasn't going to get to speak. But if you were looking at the time, they had to squeeze in that heavyweight fight before the top of the hour, so they had to get going.
They missed the pay-per-view start time again. Every show the Miz the pay-per-view startup. I guess now that they're
they used to make it like clockwork, like they never ever would miss it, and now it is more common that they
because they're not on pay-per-view. They're on ESPN Plus, and it's like they can go however long they want to. They can be late if they want to, but I know on pay-per-view they were sticklers for time because if you go over on pay-per-view, you're paying extra by the minute or so. Anyway, it's very frustrating watching these cards go long on the prelims.
Sean Woodson against Luis Saldana. What a fight this was. My God. I forgot because this was like 8 hours ago. So Woodson is just ridiculously tall for featherweight. I mean, he's not very he's skinny, but he's so tall for this weight class, and he's using his reach early on, but then Saldana clips him. Woodson goes down and he's hurt, but Saldana doesn't follow up. He knocks him down, and then he I don't know what he was doing. It was he was just walking away to admire his work, but it's like the fight's not over. He's not done, but he's compromised. You could have finished him. So then it continues. He gets back to his feet, and there's a left jab that drops him, and again, it looks like Saldana is going to finish it, and he just walks up to Woodson, who's got one knee down, and drills him with a knee to the head. Saldana thinks that the fight's over. He's celebrating. He's cheering. And Mike Beltran, who was awesome on this show, this guy didn't put up with anyone. He was swearing at these guys. He was just having none of it. And he brings Saldana down and explains this was an illegal knee. I thought he was going to get disqualified. This knee, it hit him hard. This was like Peter Yan and Aljamain Sterling. Like, it hit him flush. And the fight continues. He got a point deducted, but this was a very strong round for Saldana. So I had it 9-8 after this one. But what a bizarre, bizarre round where this guy literally had this fight won twice and prevented his own win.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the worst fight IQ performances, and there have been a few in the last few months, but just, yeah, the first one was really crazy because, he dropped Woodson, and Woodson's, wobbled, too. Like, it's not like he dropped him and he just gets up, oh, you clip me and I'm down. Like, he severely compromised at that point. And then, yeah, the next one, just the knee to the head, just awful decision-making. And then he celebrates on the cage. So I think that there was an element of an adrenaline dump that happened as well that.
Totally. This guy, for the second and third rounds, it was the combination of it. He exerted all this energy mentally. You think you've won the fight. And then he's got to continue. So in the second round, Saldana gets a takedown and Woodson from his back, applies a submission, and Anik is trying to identify it. And Rogan shined here. He was like, that's the buggy choke. And he's explaining this is a submission that a lot of high end jiu-jitsu practitioners are playing around with now. So, I mean, he instantly identified this. This was the best of Joe Rogan.
Yeah, it was the choke itself is sort of it's the same principle as an arm triangle, but you're holding on to your own leg around the shoulder, and it's from the bottom position as well. I've actually never had it applied to me because I haven't been doing jiu-jitsu for the last couple of years. So as you mentioned, this is sort of a new thing. The principles are that it's an arm triangle type of choke.
So yeah, Woodson had this applied and had it for the rest of the round. He couldn't submit him with it. So I still gave Woodson the round. But then in the third, both guys are tired. It's getting pretty sloppy here. And it's just, getting to the end of this round. Saldana's striking. It wasn't pretty, but I thought he was the more active of the two. So at the end of this, my scorecard, what did I have here? I had it 29-27 for Saldana. The scores were 29-27 Saldana, 29-27 Woodson, and then the third judge had it 28-28, so it was a split draw. I did not feel that bad for Saldana because he should have won this fight. I still scored the fight for him, even with that point deduction, but he did not get it. Unfortunate, but man, you pried that victory out of the jaws of defeat.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
He pulled a draw out of the jaws of victory.
I actually did score it a draw because I did not give that first round like the 9-8 as you did. And yeah, he has only himself to blame. Just a horrible, and you know, you could see it on his corner's face too. They were like, after the fight, even before the scores are read, they're like, dude, like, what were you doing in there?
It's not at the level that, I mean, Kamaru Usman will go back and watch this fight, and it's going to be very hard to watch knowing that it's like, I just got caught and I went out. But this guy is going to rewatch this fight, and he's probably just going to, be very angry watching the second round.
Yeah. And I don't think that the UFC is going to be too happy with him either. So I don't think he's going to get, an upgraded spot for his next fight.
AJ Fletcher and Andrzej Lausa. The first round, Lausa won, where he was, Fletcher was varying up his strikes, and then Lausa found his range and stunned Fletcher, and Lausa just charged in, landed a knee to the body in the clinch, and then hit this great looking uppercut and a double leg to end the round. In the second round, Fletcher gets taken down, but he's back up, and this round, Fletcher's nose is all bloody, but then he starts unloading on Lausa, and he gets rocked. And this dude looks like he's out on his feet, but he's just eating all these strikes from Fletcher. At one point, Lausa turns his back like he wants out at this point, but the referee, Mike Beltran, he lets it go, and Fletcher eventually shoots on him because, dude, Fletcher spent everything. This was our first like extreme gassing out situation because Fletcher just annihilated him. And to be quite honest, I think like you could have called this. Like he literally turned his back to the fighter. Like he was done. But anyway, Lausa got taken down and this allowed him to recover. It was an unbelievably crazy round. And then Lausa comes back in the third round and dude, Fletcher is on empty. He's got nothing left. And Lausa just dominated him on top with elbows, with strikes. It was like a one-sided round at the end of this all. So Lausa wins by unanimous decision on scores of 29-27 and 229-28. But again, Fletcher, I was stunned that he didn't get the win in the second round, but that was it. He had nothing left.
Yeah, it was a pretty entertaining fight until sort of like the last part of the third round. I feel like Lausa could have maybe gone for the finish, but I think he'd lost two in a row. And so maybe he was just trying to make sure he got, I think he was just trying to make sure he got the win and not take any risk. But yeah, Fletcher was done. I'm shocked that he actually made the finish because he was so exhausted, by that third round.
Yeah, so common occurrence on the show, dude. There are some tired individuals here that are not going to be raising their arm the next time they go to Salt Lake City. And Amir Albazi versus Francisco Figueiredo. This one only went around. Albazi was coming into this fight. He's 2-0 in the UFC and 14-1 overall in the flyweight division. Figueiredo threw a kick and then immediately got taken down as a consequence, and Albazi is dropping these big strikes on him. Albazi then hooks the leg, takes him down a second time, and gets to the back, rolls to the rear naked choke, and gets the submission. Rogan and Cormier very impressed with Albazi, calling him a contender, and he wins at 434 of the first round. And the funny part was that when Rogan went to interview him, he consulted with the translator, but then said, "I'm just messing with you. I don't need a translator." And then he said, "The flyweight division is full of killers. I'm the biggest one. The king is back. He wants to fight in Abu Dhabi, and I'm going to submit all the black belts." I thought this guy was great.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really get his little practical joke on Joe Rogan. It didn't really make any sense.
But he had a good speech ready.
Yeah. He was ready for it afterwards. And yeah, I mean, it's very impressive performance against, you know, a significant opponent. So yeah, you know, flyweight, you know, a division that was on life support not too long ago is one of the most exciting in the UFC.
This guy, he's 15-1. He was a giant favorite on this card. He was a minus 475 favorite. So he's another name to watch in the division. Orichi Lung versus Jay Perrin, the Mongolian murderer, as he was. Joe Rogan loves this nickname. He said he thinks it's just the best nickname, the Mongolian murderer. Is that the best nickname in MMA?
No, it's not the best nickname in MMA. It's not even the best nickname on this fight card.
Well, tell Joe Rogan that. He loved this. Orichi Lung is coming back down to he's returning to 135 after competing at flyweight for several fights. He won the first round. There was a left counter that stunned Perrin. Orichi Lung was very quick on his feet. He was landing a lot of counters. In the second round, Perrin got on top in half guard, but then they're back to his feet. Orichi Lung then takes a right hand that stuns Perrin. Good technique. He was using calf kicks, his hand speed, his head movement, all on point. He was up two rounds. And then in the third, this is where Orichi Lung is very quick with his hands, but then Perrin gets going and connected with a knee to the face, got the takedown, and they had a big exchange in the final seconds, the most significant exchange of the fight that Perrin got the better of. So I had it 29-28 for Orichi Lung, which was what all three judges scored it.
So I didn't get a chance to see these first two early prelim fights because Anthony Joshua and Usyk were still going on at this time. So I was watching that fight.
Okay, well, I'll recap this other fight, and then you can tell me what went wrong with Anthony Joshua. But the opening fight, all three fights on the Fight Pass prelims, they were very good. I thought they were all entertaining fights. It was Victor Altamirano versus Daniel Da Silva. And Da Silva drilled him, dropping him with a right hand. But then Altamirano got up to his feet, and Altamirano snuck in a knee to the body that puts Da Silva down, and then he was attacking with body shots, hammer fists, and he got on top and elbowed Da Silva, cutting open his forehead, and Altamirano is destroying him with elbows, and Da Silva has not given up his guard play yet. He's still eating all these shots, but he's trying to get something from his guard, but finally gets finished with elbows as he's just covering up and really has no defense at this point. So Altamirano wins at 3:39 of the first round with the TKO victory. And that concludes UFC 278. Entertaining card. I mean, there were some performances where guys were not ready for this elevation, and others where they had some spectacular finishes, including one of, I would say, the most spectacular in the case of Leon Edwards. But I've got to say, overall, I was pretty entertained by a card that going into there was interest, but I was not expecting this to be an all-time memorable card. And this one, it had its moments.
Well, yeah, certainly the top two fights. I mean, the Leon Edwards versus Kamaru Usman fight, the fight itself was, you know, it was okay, but it was pretty one-sided for the most part, but a finish that will be remembered and replayed over and over again. And then, yeah, the Paulo Costa versus Luke Rockhold fight, it's just like unforgettable. It sort of had like a similar type of crazy feeling that Gaethje versus Chandler had, in that you just could not keep up with the zaniness of the fight, and it had these bizarre moments. But yeah, so just those two fights alone make this something worth checking back on, or actually watching if you didn't get the chance.
How was the boxing fight?
Boxing was great. I mean, I thought Joshua looked pretty good early on, and then Usyk came back. The thing with Usyk is he has incredible movement, and it was very difficult for Joshua to land upstairs, and Joshua was working to the body, and it was working for him well. There was one point, I think it was the sixth round, where he ended the round with a straight body shot that clearly hurt Usyk, but ultimately Usyk's footwork and head movement and his own power were just too much for Joshua. So tough spot for Joshua. He's lost these two fights in a row, and it kind of kills the opportunity at that Tyson Fury fight, at least in the short term. But he's still a huge star, and I have no doubt that there's people would still be interested in seeing him fight. And then Usyk, you know, it's an amazing story. I mean, it was a great quote unquote upset the first time it happened. And then, you know, the war in Ukraine happens and he's on the front lines there and they've given him an exemption to leave. And so there's a lot of that is like on his back, for this fight. And so it made it really compelling. I thought it was a very good, entertaining fight. I mean, high level boxing is like one of my favorite things to watch, and this was definitely that.
Did you catch Kayla Harrison's fight at all this afternoon?
No, I didn't get a chance to see any of the PFL or MVP versus Mike Perry.
Yeah, Mike Perry won a decision against MVP. I mean, semi-surprising. Kayla Harrison just steamrolled Martina Yendrova. It was just, I mean, mechanical. I mean, she just took her down and worked and got, mounted her, got an arm triangle, pretty simple. And it sets up the third fight between Kayla Harrison and Larissa Pacheco for later this year. They fought twice in 2019. So it's kind of just Kayla Harrison. I mean, Larissa Pacheco, she's at least won all of her fights since they last fought. But I mean, it's just, there's such a grand disparity. They have mm-hmm. the odds up, like the in-fight odds on the screen for PFL. So during the fight, if you wanted to wager, Kayla Harrison was a minus 20,000 favorite.
Oh, wow.
I have not even seen a number like that in my life when it comes to odds.
Yeah, so that's crazy. I mean, I do have to give tip my cap to Kayla Harrison, because even without these opponents, she has been able to create a name for herself in the MMA world. And of course, she's getting paid significantly by PFL. And, you know, hopefully at some point she does get some type of significant fight. Does seem like there's an opportunity for a cyborg fight to happen. So it would be nice if they could make that, put that one together.
Yeah, I mean, that's ideal. I have no issue with someone that is just make as much as you can in the sport for the limited time that you can do it. I think she's 100% made the right decision in her career. And hopefully they can put together like a sizable fight. And just to see the curiosity of like what the level of interest would be for that type of fight. But I will say PFL, like they got creative here booking this fight in London. Almost 10 years to the day that she won her gold medal in London at the Olympics. So there was like a tie-in to doing this in London. So anyway, that was going on this afternoon, a very busy day in combat sports. And for the UFC, it will not be a busy weekend next weekend because they're off. They come back on September 3rd with their debut in Paris, France, which is headlined by Ciryl Gane and Tai Tuivasa, as well as Robert Whittaker taking on Marvin Vettori. So that's a nice 1-2 for a fight night card. And then in 3 weeks' time, it is UFC 279, Khamzat Chimaev against Nate Diaz. And as Phil relayed to us, Tony Ferguson and Li Jingliang.
I mean, it's the second best fight on that card.
It is. By leaps and bounds, it's the second biggest fight on this card because the next is like Johnny Walker and Iwan Kutalaba. Ugh. So, yes, for that card, it will be myself and Eric Marcotte that will be doing the post show, and we are going to give the floor to one Phil Chertok.
Thank you, John. So I just have a couple of announcements. So this week we actually completed the Twin Peaks watch along that we started almost 15 months ago. And many came and many went, but ultimately three were standing in the end. Chris from Ottawa, a.k.a. Hacksaw Jim Powers, myself, and Kendall, the one true king of Ohio. We made it through three seasons of one of my favorite shows of all time. And it was great to rewatch it. I hadn't seen it in years and I'd forgotten all sorts of things. And it was just lovely, bizarre, surrealist entertainment. So thank you to everybody who participated at any point, and thank you to Chris and Kendall for making it through with me to the end. And the next thing that I just wanted to say was this is going to be the last time that you see me on the post show I'm taking a step back from this. I'm sorry to break this news to you on air, John. Surprise, surprise. The couple reasons, there's some things going on in my personal life, that are very positive. I'm a little bit burned out of this sport. I've been following it for a really long time. And I just don't get as excited about the cards typically. And I don't follow it as closely as I used to. And, I think you need to be a good, somebody who's like really paying a lot of attention. And, thankfully the post world has won Eric Marcotte, who is just on top of this game and knows it, knows these fighters and fights better than me now. So, he's going to do a great job, filling in for me. That's the news. I did want to just have a few thank yous to anybody who's helped out throughout the years with some video production stuff. So I'd like to thank one Davey Portman, one Jordan Goodman. I'd like to thank Richard Avian, Neil Flanagan, Mr. Wei Ting. Of course, I have to thank Eric Marcotte. Dude, you're just a straight gangsta, and I know that you're gonna kill it on these shows, because me and you have talked about how much he's improved since starting this stuff, and he's only gonna get better. And then I want to thank my daughter Violet, who has suffered through many UFC cards on Saturday nights and, you know, some shitty Sundays where I'm tired and not the most joyful person. And then, of course, last but not least, I want to thank you, John, for giving me this opportunity and inviting me here. It was something that I wanted to do, and you let me do it. And, it was a great run. I had a lot of fun. You let me write the articles too. We did five questions. Oh, right. Remember five questions? Yeah. I'm very thankful to you for giving me this opportunity and putting me on, this is your job. This is your career. And so for you to give me this time and space, I cherish it very much. So I'm very thankful to you and everybody in post world. Anybody who left a mean comment or a good comment, those two, if you liked the video, anything, if you watched, like, thank you, everybody. It's been a fun ride.
Well, Phil, we all thank you. You have people probably don't realize that Phil has done like a ton of stuff behind the scenes in the post world for us. So it's been my pleasure to have you on all of these shows and get to chat with you at an extended length once a month, even when it's at ridiculous times on a Sunday morning, such as 2:35 as it is now. But Phil will still be around. He is always a member of the Post family, so he will still have his presence felt here at Post Wrestling.
Yes, absolutely. I'm not disappearing entirely. We do have what do they call it? Is a super chat, Jakenator, with some nice words thanking me for everything I've done over the years. So thank you, Jake, for that, and some other nice words coming in from Brandon and Dickie Bird and Yaparka. So yeah, thank you very much, everyone. And
let's end it on this note. Is there any fight that you would more prefer to watch with Brandon from New Jersey than Paulo Costa and Luke Rockhold?
I feel like if I was going to watch a fight with Brandon from New Jersey, it would have to be Fight Circus, because that's his that's his thing, and I have no doubt that his commentary would be on point.
Well, in the spirit of Elite XC, we will move on from that. But thanks to everyone for tuning in for the UFC 278 post show. Again, we'll be back with UFC 279 in 3 weeks' time, and that will be myself and Eric Marcotte. So look forward to that. It's very late. Thanks to all of you that stayed up with us or downloaded the show on Sunday like a normal person would, but we appreciate all of you. So thank you for tuning in, and that wraps up the UFC 278 post show.